Gives me great pleasure to introduce Stan, all the way from Lompoc. My name's Stan, I'm an alcoholic. There's a lot more people than I thought were here. I'm not really from Lompoc, I just live there. But anyways, yeah. Welcome to Newcomer Ashton, it's good to see you, man. Glad you're here tonight, man, glad you're here. And Michelle, I believe, yeah, Michelle, we're glad you're here. And we want you to stick around long enough to hear our message of hope, and that you can recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. You know, nothing else gets us drunk or loaded but this thing right here, you know. And if you're familiar with this book right here, it tells you that the alcoholic illness centers in the mind rather than your body. And I didn't know that when I got here, you know. I had no idea. I thought I had a really hardcore drinking problem and a drug problem too, but we'll save that for another place. I just really want to start off by saying how grateful I am to have gotten here this time around. It took me, I had to keep coming in and out, since 2001. I finally made it back May 30th, 2013, by the skin of what was left of my teeth here to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm grateful that there was people here to welcome me still, you know. I have friends in this room that I've known for over 20-something years, you know. I just don't have 20-something years sobriety. I have a little over 10 years, you know. But, man, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, man. I'll tell you what, this thing right here saved my life. This book right here. Everything that's written inside of it, you know. I'm going to read something out of it real quick because I'm a book guy, I guess you can say. But right in the preface, it says, because of this book has become the basic text for our society and has helped such large numbers of alcoholic men and women to recovery, there exists strong sentiment against any radical changes being made in it. And it's talking about the first portion of this book, and that's where the program is outlined in the first 164 pages. And that's what saved my life, man. I'll tell you what, man, if you're not serious about stopping drinking, I put in some earplugs right now or I'd leave. Because what you guys did do when I kept coming in and out, you guys completely ruined my drinking, man. It was pretty fucked up, excuse my language. But, you know, you guys just ruined it. You know, I didn't have a chance out there. You know, and I tried so hard, man. I like to call it Fantasy Island. I learned how to check out up here, you know, completely check out, drink, get loaded, and just barbecue my life. That's all I knew how to do, you know. It's just barbecue my life. And I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous that just enough of it was going inside of here. And I was hearing, you know what, Stan, you need to get back to AA. You need to do something, you know. And I thank God I made it back May 30th, 2013. And I like to share about that day because it was not my plan. When I woke up that morning, I had everything at my disposal. All the cheap vodka I could ever want, you know, all the methamphetamines I could ever wanted. But man, for some reason, I did not pick up that day. I don't know why. I have no idea why. I mean, it took a while for me to understand, but God had a plan, man. He lined up all the angels to get me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that day. You know, I was sentenced to this outpatient program, and I went and I sat inside this group, and I realized, you know what, Stan, if you really want to get sober, this ain't the place, man. This is not the place. This is only a temporary step for a guy like me. You know, and I know how to play those games. I don't know if there's any other programmers out here. I know how to play that game real well. You know, do the whole 6 months, and right after I go right back to what I know best. Just like every time I went to jail, every time I went to prison, it was just like, man, I know how to play that game. I know how to program. I know how to do jail. I know how to program and do that stuff. But right when I get out and they say, hey, you know what, Casares, you got to roll it up. I'm like, boom, cocktail light. I wonder what Chewy's doing. I wonder what Shopping Cart Willie's doing. I wonder if they're still hanging out outside the liquor store telling jail. You know, and I go right back to that. I didn't know that I suffered from this thing up here. I allow this thing to make all the decisions for me. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I had to read it in the book. Because what happened was, you know what's in this book, man? They say, truth will set you free, but first it's going to piss you off. And you're going to find yourself. And I hope you do. Anybody who's new and they start reading this book, man, I hope you find yourself. And I hope you get pissed off. Like, how dare they talk about me? Because when they mention selfishness, self-centeredness, I'm like, God dang, man, how dare they? You know, my mother used to call me ungrateful. You ungrateful little son of a gun. And I used to get mad at her. And I didn't know why I was getting mad at her. Because she was telling me the truth. She was telling me the truth. You know, so I'm grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life, you know. And I'm not just saying just Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything that I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because everything I was looking for in the bottle, in the sack, in gambling, in sex, I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And trip out on this, it was right here the whole time. Every time I was looking for God, and you know, I've been baptized and ordained, you know, there was never enough holy water for a guy like me to finally get my head out of my ass, you know, it just didn't happen for me. I had to come in here and find it. It was right here the whole time, you know. And the God of my understanding, he's just who he is, you know what I mean? I'm not going to put no names on it, no labels. He's just everything I was looking for, and I didn't know that. You know, for me, God is everything. I don't share about it too much, but God is everything. He's all I got, man. I trust it. I tried every imaginable remedy, but none of that stuff ever worked, you know? But I'll tell you what, Alcoholics Anonymous worked. Alcoholics Anonymous is a solution for me. I'm going to read something, and I'm going to share off this because I didn't get a chance to share this morning. I got a resentment. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't. But I really like the topic this morning, and I want to read a little bit of it because it's who I am today. It's how I got to where I'm at today, you know? And it was titled Vigilance, and it says, "We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of time of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no kind of reservation, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol." And that was the thing that I was suffering from, was this thing. I kept thinking, you know what? I got this, you know. I get all these lurking notions. If you haven't noticed, I got a big head because I'm a thinker, you know what I mean? And there's plenty of room for lurking notions going on in here, right? There's also plenty of rooms to forget. There's plenty of room to forget that I'm an alcoholic. I forget. And it's on and cracking. And I go right back to what I know best, you know? And I had to learn these things. Coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had to learn that I suffer from a mental illness. It's going on up here all the time, you know? And it doesn't go away either, you know? I wish it would, but the only way I can keep it at bay or in arrest is if I trust God, if I allow God. And I didn't know that was a solution for me. And it's not a religious thing, so calm down, all right? I'm not talking about we got to go to church every Sunday, we got to do this, we got to do that. No, no. I'm talking about trusting something other than this. For me, that's God. You know, I have an understanding of what God is, and it's complete opposite of who I am, nature-wise, you know. And so I trust that dude, and for some reason, he just makes life a lot easier for me. I have to, you know, I don't have to worry no more. I don't have to, man, look, watch behind my back, you know, how to... Because chances are, if I'm doing that, I'm not doing the things that are going to put me in a position to have to watch my back, right? I just won't, you know? So how I got here at Alcoholics Anonymous, man, I was very vigilant when I got here about getting this thing. I didn't know what was going on, you know? And that's the same way the way my drinking was since I was a kid. You know, I grew up here in Santa Maria. I grew up in a neighborhood. I grew up in two different neighborhoods. I grew up in the projects, and I also grew up on the east side. And that's because my mom lived on the east side, and my dad worked and lived by the projects. So those are my playgrounds, you know what I mean? It was just a little bit different. And I would watch people do the things that they were doing, and I would look up to them, you know? There's this line in this movie called Goodfellas, and the guy says, you know, as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. And that was me. That's who I always wanted to be. Those are the people I looked up to. But then I went to Miller School. I don't know if anybody's from Santa Maria, but I went to Miller School, which is a complete opposite. You know what I mean? So it was kind of weird me trying to be a gangster, be a cholo at a different school where people are looking at me like, hey, why does your pants look like that? And why is your shirt, you know, you look a little funny. What kind of shoes are those? Man, you know, so I was a little different, you know, I was a little different. And I couldn't help it because my household, I'm the only one between my mom and my dad. So I had other, you know, brothers and sisters from different, you know, they're my mom's kids and then from my dad's side. And I always felt different, and they always made sure I felt different, you know? So I grew up feeling different. And so, I just grew up, and I was very vigilant about doing things that are complete opposite against the grain. You know, I'm always doing things against the grain. You know, I started drinking at a very young age. At 11 years old, I made a decision on my own that I was going to, you know, take a drink and smoke some weed, and that was it, man. And it was on and cracking. I found what I needed, you know, and it gave me what I wanted. You know, and like I said, I kept searching for that, to fill that void on the inside. And the whole time I was just oblivious to what it was, you know. And it was mainly because I didn't want to look at me, because everybody was different. So I felt different, and I didn't want to be like, you know, all these other people. I wanted to be like the gang members and the guys that were shooting heroin in the projects and, you know what I mean? And I wanted to be like them guys, except for doing the heroin. I just wanted to be the gang bit. Yeah, I don't wanted people to fear me, because I was in fear and I was living in that fear and I'm trying to function in that fear. So what happened in school is like, man, I just kept messing up everything, man. I just, you know, they were just like, you know what, Stan, we're just going to pass you along. We're just going to let you keep going. And things started progressively getting worse. You know, I went from just drinking beer, smoking some weed, to when I turned 13 years old, I'm using cocaine. By the time I'm 15 years old, I'm selling cocaine. You know, I'm selling drugs. I'm doing all these things because I want to be different. I want to get outside of here. You know, I mean, I want to fill the void that's right here. So I just kept doing them things, running on fear. I didn't know that I was doing that. You know, I thought I was a real tough guy. In all reality, I was not a tough guy. You know, I was hurting people out of fear. You know, I'm going to hurt you before you hurt me. I'm one of them kind of guys, you know, and that's the way my life went. You know, I don't have to get into all the drinking, but just I didn't know that everything that was going on up here was ruining my life because I kept listening to what was going on up here. You know, there's this thing I heard this person share. I don't know if anybody's familiar with this, but it's a radio station. It's called Cape Fuck It. I don't know if anybody's heard of that radio station, Cape Fuck It, right? Man, I love that radio station. I'd have it turned up all the way, all the time. And what happens, I have that little radio station turned up. I'm not listening to what's going on in here. And what's going on in here is I hear this little tiny voice saying, hey, Stan, I don't think you should do that, man. I think maybe you should go to school. I think maybe you should show up on time. You know, I think you shouldn't talk to your mom that way. You shouldn't talk to your dad that way, and quit trying to manipulate everybody. You know, that voice was real low, but I just got that, okay, fuck it, with extra bass, extra treble, you know what I mean? I just got turned up so loud, and I couldn't hear all the things that was going on in here, you know? And I didn't know that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Someone shared that, and I was like, hey, you know what? That's me. That's exactly how I was running. I was running on fear, you know? But I didn't know that because, like I said, I thought I was a tough guy, you know, real tough guy, still living at mom's, you know what I mean? When things go wrong, I call it mom's. I end up in jail calling mom, you know what I mean? I'm in prison, I'm calling mom, you know? But the guys, the fellas would come around and be like, oh, no, mom, all right, no, I'm doing good. Yeah, don't worry about me, you know? But when they turn the back, I'm like, oh, get me out of here. You know, I'm one of them kind of guys, you know? So, yeah, that's just, I didn't know that's how I was operating, you know? And I had a lot of good things going for me, but I chose drinking. I chose that over everything that was good, decent, and positive in my life. You know? I just recently celebrated my 50th birthday. You know? And someone had asked me, hey, how do you feel about, you know, the crossover from going to 49-50? I'm like, fuck, it's just another year. You know what I mean? But she's like, but how do you feel? I go, you know what? I actually feel like I'm probably about 30 years old right now. I'm barely scratching the surface of what I want to do in my life, you know? I got sober when I was 39, right before my 40th birthday, and I feel like that was the beginning of me starting to grow up. And what I mean by growing up is I'm finally taking responsibility for my life, you know? And that happened May 30th, 2013, when I said, my name is Stan, I'm an alcoholic. You know, the best decision ever made from the cradle to the grave was the day I stepped inside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and took responsibility for my life. For once. Now, I've been, like I said, I've been in and out. But for some reason, when I came in this time, I meant business. And I've been very vigilant about what I want to do with my life, you know. And I have no idea where it's going to go. I just keep suiting up and showing up, man. The one thing that means more than anything to me is I want to stay sober more than I can fucking breathe. Excuse my language. More than anything in this world, do I want to stay sober? Because I know when I let this thing go, hey, you know what, Stan, hey, they got all these dispensaries in Lompoc. You can probably smoke a little weed. Nah, man. That thought went through my head one day, and I was like, where the fuck did that come from? And I think I missed a day at a meeting. But anyways, you know, left to my own thinking, man, I'm in trouble. You know? But I know because I've had this burn, this desire to want to stay sober more than anything in this world, a lot of things, a lot of doors have been opening up for me. You know? And I thank God for that. I went back to school. I got these certificates. I got a job. I started working in a treatment field. And things started changing for me, you know. And especially my perception, you know. I had to start thinking about other people. And what happened was there's a couple of chapters in the back of the book. Not in the back, but in the first 364 pages. It's one chapter to the wives, to the family afterwards, and to the employers. And I started learning something about empathy. And I started thinking back about all the times that, all the jobs I had gotten. And I just kind of like, you know what, fuck this. I'm out of here. You know, I put in a 2-week notice. I'm gone by the third day. You know what I mean? I was one of them kind of guys, you know. And I was just going to work for all the wrong reasons. I always had jobs and I hated my job. Oh my God, why do I got to keep coming here? And since I've been sober, every job I've had, I treat it like you guys are giving me a chance when I don't deserve this chance, you know. So the other part about vigilant, so I was very vigilant about drinking, about getting loaded, about having relationships, and then just casting them to the side. And I was very vigilant about hurting people, but I didn't know I was doing that. I thought everybody else was treating me wrong, so they deserved what I was giving them and how I was treating them, you know. I dropped out of high school at 18 years old, moving up to the Bay Area to start smoking cocaine because I thought that was a great idea. You know, going to school was boring. I couldn't stand it. And I remember they had this meeting with all the teachers and all these, you know, people from the district, superintendents and all this stuff. And they wanted to talk to me. I'm like, why? And I get in there and they're like freaking telling me how bad of a person I was. And it wasn't how bad I was. It was how much potential I had. But I was thinking they were talking bad about me, right? Because my thing, this thing is all warped, you know? And one teacher got up and she started crying. She's like, I know you're doing something other than smoking weed. She's like, I know you're doing hard drugs. And at that time, I was doing nothing but selling cocaine. You know, I don't know anything else. That's the best thing I know how to do. Why are you trying to take that away from me? You know, I've been selling drugs since I was 13 years old. And you want me to change my life? No. And I said, the hell with you guys, and I'm out of here. And I left that room, and I left in tears. I'm like, they've touched me, but you know what? I had to get loaded in order for that feeling to go away. And I moved out to the Bay Area, and I barbecued my life. And I heard, it was the first time I called my mom, and I was like, oh, get me out of here. I don't know what I'm doing, please. I think I'm hooked on drugs. And she can't pick me up, and I come back home, and I go right back to what I know best. She thought, you know what? I'm going to buy you. Now she bought me a $1,200 stereo, right? And I ended up selling that fucking thing. Excuse my language, you know? I broke my mother's heart so many damn times. And I just kept doing it. Maybe I had every intention inside of me to want to make amends to her and do the right thing. But I couldn't. I'm so wrapped up into this, you know? And my mind's always changing. It's always changing. I wish it would just slow down. And just wouldn't slow down, man. I just kept changing. You know, so I don't want to talk about my whole... Anyways, I eventually graduated to higher levels, you know. Started going to jail. My first time in jail. First time in jail, I found God. Anybody else find God in jail? Am I the only one? Yeah, I found God in jail, man. And I kept leaving him there. I'd be like, I'll be right back. You know what I mean? Wait here. No, I'll take the book, you know, but... You wait here, you know? I kept doing that. I kept doing it, man. And it was the only time, and I'd always get in jail, and I'd be like, oh, we're going to start a Bible study. Praise Jesus, and all this other stuff. And then, man, they'd tell me to roll it up. I'm like, I wonder what Chewy's doing. All right, yeah. I'm going to go hit him up, you know? And I go right back to Chewy's house, and we hang out and try and watch a Raider game while smoking crack and shit like that. Anyways, so, you know, it just kept progressively getting worse. Progressively. I had a great idea one time that, you know what, I just need a girlfriend. And there was a period of time, mind you, there was a period of time where I didn't have any other relationships other than King Cobra and cocaine. There was no other relationships with any girls, with any females, that is. Because that was way more important than doing anything else. And so I got a great idea. I said, you know what, I just need a girlfriend. If I get a girlfriend, maybe I'll stop doing this. And so I got a girlfriend. We stopped for a little while. And then next thing you know, we're both doing it. And then she ends up pregnant. And then she leaves me. Because I can't stop. And she had every right to leave me. I was an asshole. I was such an asshole. And she left me pregnant. And she ended up having my oldest daughter. Which some people in this room know. And so I kept getting these great ideas. And then we got back together. And then we did a really stupid thing. And we got married. You know what I mean? And had another kid. And then things were getting bad. The heat was on out here. So we moved out to Oklahoma. And had another kid. God dang, man. And there I am, selfish and self-centered. I want to blame her for the marriage when I have a part too. You know? And I had a part. And so I ended up leaving her in Oklahoma and came back out here. And continue to barbecue my life a little bit more. And then I had another great idea. I just need another girlfriend, you know? And then it just got, you know, and then there I go again. Got another baby on the way. And that baby was the angel, you know, she was the apple of my eye. She was everything to me. Fast forward, we both went to jail. And I'm going in and out of jail. I finally get introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was out of an ultimatum. She told me, I'm in jail. And I'm like, yeah, we're just going to praise Jesus and get out and go to church and this and that. She goes, look, I'm doing this program right now. Like, if you want, you know, I would like for you to come to a meeting with me or something. And I'm like, a meeting of what? What? Meeting of the minds or what the hell? What's going on here? She's like, no, come to AA meeting with me, 12-step meeting. And I was like, all right. And I went into that meeting. I'm like, yeah, they ain't going to tell me nothing I don't know, right? I got Jesus, you know. And I heard everything I needed to hear in that meeting. And I asked the guy to be my sponsor right after. His name was Joe G. He just passed away maybe about 4 years ago. And he was such a good guy. He took me through the steps. And we got busy early on. And that's where I learned about, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. So we get busy. We don't sit around and wait for things to happen. We make it happen. And I stuck around, man. And I got a job. I got a house. You know, I started doing things. My head told me, hey, you got a job. You got an apartment now. You don't really need to go to that many meetings. And I started calling in on my commitments. Started letting my sponsor know, like, hey, I'm not going to make it. He started to go, you know what, dude? You need to show up. And I said, well, I'm working. I'm taking care of my family, dude. Like, for reals? Like, you want me to show? Like, I got other shit to do right now. I'm clean. Don't worry about that, you know? And let me tell you what happens to people who stop going to meetings after they've been coming to meetings for a while. Not a lot of people talk about it. But I'm going to share about it tonight because it's been my experience. And what happens to people who stop going to meetings after they've been coming to meetings for a while and working steps and getting commitments is they get restless, irritable, and discontent. And pretty soon, taking a drink sounds like a pretty good idea. Some people bite a bullet. You know, I'm lucky I just only got loaded and I didn't kill myself, you know. Because this thing starts going off. This thing gets really bzzz. And I was off and running. They tried sending me to a Santa Barbara Rescue Mission, and I skipped out on that, and I eventually landed up in prison, man. I didn't want to go to prison. I'm scared shitless of prison. God dang, man. Don't send me there. You know, when I first got to prison, I'm looking up, and I'm like, oh, shit, we ain't in Kansas no more, Toto. You know what I mean? All the barbed wire stuff. I was like, oh, hell no. But, yeah, I definitely did not want to go to prison, but because of my drinking and using, that's where I ended up going. And I had to accept that, you know. And I did my time in there. I got ordained. I was going to be the next Billy Graham. Hallelujah. Praise God. Everybody grab their Bible. Anyways, and that didn't work. 6 hours after I paroled, I was drunk, loaded, and all those credentials I walked out of that prison with were gone. You know, that wasn't my calling. It wasn't for me. And I got out, and I went right back to what I know best. And as scared as going to prison I was, I knew I was going back. And I welcomed it, and I kept going back. Because I kept letting this thing make all the decisions for me, you know? It starts justifying, you know, it ain't that bad. And every time I got out, it would always tell me, hey, it's going to be different this time. Oh, man, I always bought into that one. It's going to be different this time. It's like, no, it's not, man. It's going to be the same. And when is it, no longer okay for that, you know? So I just kept going in and out, and I had another kid, so that's five, all right? Anybody keep count? That's five. Three from my first wife, two from... Anyways, my daughter ended up getting sick, the apple of my eye, Rosie. She ended up with leukemia, And man, as much as I wanted to stop just for her, I could not stop, man. I just couldn't. And it's the one thing every parent fears is losing one of their children. And my kid has had a terminal illness, you know what I mean? Fatal. And I couldn't stop. Couldn't stop using. I couldn't stop dealing. I just could not stop for her sake. And she got really sick. And one more time I get picked up, and this time my parole officer said, you know what, I'm going to let county deal with you and see what they say. And what happened was the county gave me a program. And at the same time, my three oldest children were taken away from their mother, and I was given the opportunity to get them back. And I got busy here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got this sponsor in Santa Barbara. I ended up back in the Santa Barbara Rescue Mission. My original home group is the Men Without Legs. And I got a sponsor at that meeting. And I walk into this meeting and it was like a gym, like a recovery gym, I swear. You go in, there's people over here doing a third step, they're on their knees praying. And over here, there's somebody sharing their fourth step. And you know, it was like, man, it was cool. It was like boot camp, you know? I asked this guy, Andy Ruiz, I share his name because he's no longer with us. I asked him to be my sponsor, and he showed me a lot about the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we went page for page, you know, line for line, and my life started to change for the better there. And while I was there, I was able to be to get custody of my kids back. And then when I finished that program, I came back and I spent as much time as I could with my daughter all the way to her last breath. And I got to make amends to her because she didn't really know me because I've been in and out of jail so much. Like, she barely knew who I was, you know. But I got to make amends to her by just suiting up and showing up and not trying to press, you know, hey, I'm your father, you know, you need to treat me this way. I did not do that with her at once. And she eventually was talking about me behind my back to her kids, to her mom and to her grandma, that, you know what, I love my dad. He is a good guy after all. And I got to see, you know, she got to see me before she passed away. She ended up passing away November 24th of 2010. And the story behind that, right before that, my father had passed away August 24th. And I'm a firm believer that he left so that way when she got there, she wasn't alone. You know, and I love that little girl with my whole heart to this day. It doesn't matter how long she's been gone. I still love her like she was still here yesterday, you know, and I'll never forget her, and I'll never not celebrate her memory. I'm usually wearing purple in honor of her because that was her favorite color. So I got purple, but I'm not going to show you where. Anyways, I love that little girl, man. That's the toughest thing anybody could ever went through. And I did it sober, but I didn't stay sober too long. It was like 8 months after she passed, I ended up picking up a drink again. Because I was just staying so busy and not concentrating on Stan. I'm concentrating on all these guys I'm sponsoring, concentrating on all these places I'm speaking at, that I wasn't paying attention to what was going on with me. You know? And so I got a resentment, and man, that resentment was deep, and I could not let it go. And I told my sponsor, I was like, dude, I'm going to get loaded, man. I feel like getting loaded. And so he gave me some simple direction that I wasn't willing to take. He told me to, you know, write out the inventory. I shared the inventory with him. He told me to go back and do the seven-step prayer. And I went and I did the seven-step prayer after I took the book down and contemplated on the first five proposals. And then he told me, when you're done with that, I want you to go grab a newcomer, go down to the club, grab a sponsee, grab somebody, and listen. And that was the one thing I couldn't do. I couldn't get outside of myself. And I told myself, you know what, tomorrow, if God doesn't show up, the insanity had already returned. And I told myself, hey, if God don't show up tomorrow at 2 o'clock, I'm gonna do what I do. And that's what I did. And God was calling me through Facebook, on my cell phone, through text messages, and it was all you people who were reaching out to me. And I just completely shut everybody out, and I decided to pick back up. And I was out there almost 2 years completely barbecuing my life, man. So bad. You know, I ended up in a park. I ended up in a park in Goleta, and I told everybody I was in Beverly Hills. But I was sleeping in a park, man. I was living it up, man. I was living it up. What do you call it? Glamping? Anyways, I was at Gersh Park. I don't know if anybody's familiar with Santa Barbara. Gersh Park is right behind the Costco in Goleta. And there was a restroom, and they had plugins for a guy like me that I can go in there, plug in my cell phone, plug in my laptop, plug in my little speakers. And I had my Raiders blanket all laid out, and I was just chilling, man. Chilling at that park. Completely shut myself off from everybody. And one day it hit me while I was at that park. It hit me. You know, I knew how to check out. Like I said, I like to call it Fantasy Island. I like completely check out from everything. But it hit me. And I heard that voice, and it said, Stan, you're dying out here, dude. You're all by yourself. Where are your kids? You need to get back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't want to hear that. I didn't want to hear that. Because every time I heard that, that hurt me. That touched me. You know, I was one of them guys that at first, after I decided to drink again, I would listen to old speaker tapes that I had done. You know, I'm fooling myself, so I'm one of them kind of guys. And I would listen to other speaker CDs, you know, and it was never enough to get me back in the rooms. But it was enough to say, you know what, Stan, you know everything, and you're dying out here. What is your problem? So I heard just enough for me to get off my ass and get back to Santa Maria. I was fighting a case at that time. I had already gotten picked up. I got new charges, you know. And thank God I wasn't on parole because they would have sent me back to prison. You know, it was a whole new slate for me. And came back, and like I said, that day, I don't know how it all happened. Like I said, on May 30th, 2013, I didn't wake up that morning and say, you know what, today's the day I'm gonna go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I woke up and I'm like, oh shit, I'm alive. That's like pretty much how I woke up. I didn't want to wake up. But I went and I did the things I needed to do, and I went to that program, and I realized, you know what, if I want to get sober, if I really want to get sober, this is not the place that's going to get me sober. Alcoholics Anonymous is going to get me sober. So I leapt outside of that place, the office, and it was only like a block and a half away from where I lived, right? And I get up to the stoplight, and I look, and I see my daughter going out to her car. And so me, you know, there's a story about me in this book. It's called The Jaywalker. And I decided to, you know, the light was red, and I decided to jaywalk. And I ran down to her, and I'm calling her. I'm like, hey. And she's like, what? And I'm like, where are you going? She's like, I'm going to a meeting, Dad. In other words, I'm going to a meeting, you asshole. That's exactly how her tone was. And I said, well, can I go with you? And she was like, yeah, I guess. Come on. And I get in the car, and I was surprised she unlocked the door for me to get in the car. But I get in the car, and we're going down to the meeting, and the first person I see is my friend Billy right here. And he was happy, welcomed me, and he hugged the tears out of me. And I went into that meeting, and I'm like, who am I going to ask to be my sponsor? I get in the meeting, started right when I got in there. And there was a guy across the room, his name's Jason, and I knew I had to ask him to be my sponsor. Right after that meeting, I went and asked him with tears, will you be my sponsor? He said, dude, I'd be honored. And when we look back on that day, my story is when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. I didn't know I was ready, but the teacher knew I was ready. And when I asked him to be my sponsor, from that moment until this, that obsession to want to drink had been lifted. And the only way I can describe how that happened is because God was doing for me what I could not do for myself. When I talk to him, every time we talk about that, he's like, dude, he's like, I don't know what I was doing at that meeting. I never go to that meeting. He said, but for some reason, when I seen you, I knew I had to be at that meeting. I knew I was at that meeting for the right reasons. And I thank him for accepting me to be his sponsee. And I let that guy dictate my life, man. I had to let someone do the thinking for me. You know, that's just for me. Because I allow this thing to sit around long enough, man, I'm in trouble. And I had to get the answers. You know, I had to get the answers. How do I do this? And that was like one of the big questions. Like, how do you live life without drinking? How do you do it? I've been in and out of the rooms long enough. I had to dummy up and let go of everything I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? Because I kept coming in thinking I know something, right? Because I've been here before. I had to let all that shit go. I had to let everything go. And I would call him and I'd bug him. I'd be like, dude, what do I do next? He'd be like, go to sleep. You know, it's like 9 o'clock at night. I'd be like, it's time to go to bed, bro. Like, fuck, call me tomorrow, you know? And it was little things like that, you know? I'd be like, well, what about, you know, what about this? And he'd be like, find it in the book and hang up on me, you know? He did a lot of that stuff too, you know? Because the answers were in the book for me. I like to complicate the shit out of things, you know? Because I stay in here long enough, you know? So I got here and I got busy. Got busy right away. Started working them steps, you know? After 90 days, I was finished with my steps and I started sponsoring. I'm like, what do I do next? He's like, I'll start sponsoring. So I got sober in a sober living pathways, and right away I started sponsoring guys, you know? And people were looking at me like, dude, you only got 90 days. I'm like, dude, I already worked the steps. What are you doing? You know? And it's the only way. I didn't think people would stick around, and nobody did. Like, not that many people stuck around, you know? I got one guy right now. He's got, he's coming up on 9 years, you know? And I got 10, and, you know, I didn't. And it was nothing that I did. It was everything that I guided him through, you know? I can never take credit for other people's recovery. I can only take credit for my recovery. So I got a pretty good success rate. I'm still sober after all this time. But the only way I stay sober is by helping other people. And I didn't think, that wasn't in my book. That wasn't like, no way. It's always what's in it for me. I'm a very selfish and self-centered guy. Yeah, I'll give you a ride, but what do you got? You know, sure, I'll do this for you, but what's in it for me? You know, I'm one of them kind of guys, you know? So coming here and learning a different concept on how to live life, man, it's been like nothing short of a miracle. Nothing short of a spiritual, psychic change, excuse my language. I just started doing these things and things started happening in my life. And then things bad were happening in my life. So the first thing that happened was my sister passed away. And I was only maybe 90 days sober. And first thing I started thinking was, man, here we go again. Last time my father died, last time, and then my daughter died. And who's next, you know? And I started just kind of set myself up. And so my sister passed away. And then before I even had 8 months, my mother passed away. You know, but I'll tell you what, that was one woman that I got to make amends to before she passed away. You know, she didn't want anything to do with me at all when I got sober. And I would get little expressions like, you know, and I would just suit up and show up and just sit with her. I knew she didn't want me around, but I just sat with her. I didn't ask her for nothing. I didn't talk to her about anything. I just sat with her watching freaking Price is Right and Young and the Restless. Oh, my God. Yeah, I got a little boring. Anyways. And I would just sit with her. And then I would ask her, Mom, do you want coffee? And then eventually she starts saying, you know, little things like that. You want me to make you something? My mom wasn't eating that good. She wasn't doing good. And I'd make her, I'll take some toast, all right? Then she started talking to me. And then I started telling her, okay, Mom, I'm going to a meeting. She's like, I think you should. And I would go to the meeting. And I would come back. And not once did I ever tell her, like, Mom, I got 90 days. Or Mom, I got, you know, I never told her anything like that. You know, she would just see me come. And then she would see me go. I'll go to a meeting. And I'll come back. And I'll sit down with her. But right up, you know, she's seen my life progressively get better. And I went into the sober living. I got a job. And I started bringing her things, you know what I mean? And then I was working at the Maverick. That was my first job. I got a job at the Maverick. My brother Glenn, he would come and pick me up. Like, I don't know how the hell I'm going to get home. I got a job out in San Ynez. I don't know how I'm going to get home. I just knew I can get out there. As long as I get out there, then I have a job, right? As long as I suit up and I show up, I got a job. Nobody ever told me that. Well, how are you going to get home, dummy? Like, in the middle of the night, you know? And I had a brother, Glenn, that would always come and pick me up, you know? We'd always talk about recovery on the way home. But my mom, some nights, my mom would like to come out and pick me up. And she would go to the casino and do her little thing, get her little coffee and stuff. And then she would come, and she loved seeing me get off work, all sweaty and smelling like food and stuff. Yeah. But I got to sit with her all the way until her last breath. You know, I loved her so much. She was everything to me. You know, and I had to tell her, Mom, it's okay to let go. It's okay. I'm going to be all right. She was worried about me. I'm the baby with all my kids. She was worried about me with my kids. And I said, Mom, we're going to be all right. And it took her a week before she passed. But I kept telling her every day, Mom, I'm going to be all right. And eventually she passed. And I'll tell you what, when she first went into a coma, I went and I prayed over her. And I was just like, you know what, God, just take her, man. Just take care of her. Let her go and let her be with you. And I cried all the way until my eyes were dry. And at that moment, I felt a peace inside of me, a peace I'd never known. But it was a peace that I was going to be okay with my mom passing. And I was okay all the way until her last breath. You know, only stuff like that happens here in Alcoholics Anonymous because I heard somebody else do that. And I said, you know what, why don't I try that too? You know, thank God it didn't lead me back to drinking. Thank God that that person who shared that was somebody who had to share that. So I don't know if anybody needed to hear that tonight. So I went back to school, started doing things. My life is getting better. And I didn't think that things would get better in my life, you know. But it was always like this. It was always like this because things don't just, you don't come to Alcoholics Anonymous and life becomes perfect. No, because right here, man, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we practice these principles in all our affairs. And Bill's story, he talks about it, man. It's a design for living that works in rough going. So nowhere in the book does it tell me that it's going to be perfect. It tells me that things are going to happen. How am I going to react to it? And that's what I needed to learn how to do. How do you live life on life's terms? When things happen, how do I stay sober through that? And that's what I needed to know. And for me, it's I need to trust God. It's either I'm trusting God or I'm relying on self again. And I already know selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of my illness. You know? So life just keeps happening. this last year, I had a niece that I was really close to. She was more like a sister to me than a niece. And she finally, I followed her pretty much in 2001. So she knew about this program, but she struggled, man. We've got in trouble. We're both parolees. We both ended up going to prison. You know, we were out there just doing all the dumb shit that people do on the streets, gang banging, drug dealing, all that stuff. And she ended up coming back to the rooms and she got a piece of this. And then she ended up getting cancer. And for New Year's Eve, this past, I spent with her and watching her take her last breath. And it hurt. You know, it hurt. But I'd rather watch her take her last breath from cancer than her last breath from being in addiction and alcoholism. And I prayed over her and I got to spend time with her, you know. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous because I would have never known how to deal with things like that, you know. And like I said, this is where I'm growing up. You know, who would have thought I'm 50 years old, but I'm barely growing up. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Just a few months ago, I was in fear of turning 50. I would never even announce I'm turning 50. You know, who wants to say they're turning 50? Anyways, I don't know. Well, you know, I had too much pride. See, that's the thing, man, about Alcoholics Anonymous. I had too much pride to admit my real age, you know. I just like, just in case, you know. No, man. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I love God. I love the fellowship. I love you people. I love Santa Maria. Santa Maria, this is where I grew up. I can say this is where I grew up. In this room is where I've actually grown up. You know, I've been a kid all my life, you know, all the way until I was 39, 40 before I got here. I've just been thinking like a kid. And today I can be a grown up, you know, today I can be an adult, you know. And sometimes when I say, are there any adults in here? I'm like, God damn, did I raise my hand up? Anyways, man, I couldn't express. The only way I can express my gratitude is by helping other people, you know. Just last year, or no, this year, my birthday is on May 30th, I went back to school, and these people were talking about, you know, hey, we can probably get your record expunged. I got a pretty platinum record, right? And on May 30th, one of the lawyers, a public defender, took all my stuff back to court and got my whole record expunged. And he called me the next day and he told me, he goes, "Hey man, I just sent you an email. This is what happened in court." And I was like, completely forgot about it, right? Completely forgot about it. And I was just like, no way. Not once did I ever think I would get a license. Not once did I ever think I would get hired in a facility that's county funded, you know, and not once did I ever think that I would get my record expunged. I was pretty okay with living the rest of my life having this record. Yeah, I wrote my background check. Yeah, I got some shit in it. Oh, well. But as of today, man, I have a clean record. I couldn't imagine that, you know. And it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I stayed vigilant. And when opportunities arise, I say, yeah, sign me up. Do what you got to do, you know. When doors open, I say, okay, yeah, you know. And I thank God for the people in this room that have been there for me since I got here this time around, you know. if you're new and you're struggling, man, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. We're glad you're here, man. This is the place. This is where it's at. This is where I didn't think I would ever find anything worth value in my life. I thought it was just a passing thing for me. But I found everything that I need to learn about right living in these rooms. I had to work for it. You know, it's not a bench-warming program. We don't sit on our ass and get all the things that we have. You know, everybody works for it. Everybody works the steps. We can't work them for you, but you can work them for yourself and find out, man, what's going to happen. You're not going to know. You know, I always say, take that risk. You know, I don't know about anybody else that's taking any risk late at night, drunk or driving, or trying to go score some dope. Anyways, I've taken plenty of risk. I shouldn't even be here today. But what happened was I gave it a chance. I said, you know what? I'm going to try Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me see. I'm going to try it one more time is what I said when I got here. And let's see what happens. And my life has been so freaking awesome, man. With rough going. You know, my girlfriend got cancer last year, man, and it was the biggest thing I ever feared because my daughter passed away from leukemia, and she ended up with leukemia, and she beat the cancer, man. And not once did I ever question, how come her and not my daughter? You know, no, man. Everything's supposed to happen just the way it's supposed to happen, you know? And I'm going to keep coming back because it's the only thing that's ever worked for a guy like me. I tried every imaginable remedy, but nothing's worked like Alcoholics Anonymous has. Thank you.
Stand. Let's give Stan.